Hello, one and all, and welcome to Film Fragments, a podcast where we take fragments of an actor, director, and genre and tell you our favorites from their catalog. My name is Brian Suffield. I'm your host, and I'm very excited to welcome you guys to this week's episode of Film Fragments, where today we're going to be taking a look at the career of Oscar-winning actor Al Pacino. No, he doesn't have a film coming out this week, so why would we be talking about him? Because why the hell not? So we're going to go through the career of Al Pacino. We're going to be talking about our favorites from his catalog, and I'm very excited to be getting into the career of Al Pacino, but I'm also excited to welcome today's guest. Our guest today is David Gonzalez. He is a member of the New York Film Critics Online, Hollywood Critics Association, Latino Entertainment Journalists, International Film Society Critics. He's a Rotten Tomatoes approved critic, and he's also the editor-in-chief of the Cinematic Reel. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to this for quite a while.
I'm so excited to have you on. I cannot wait to talk to you about Al Pacino. But before we get into talking about Al Pacino, I would just love to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself, talk a little bit about what you do, what got you into film, and why you love it so much.
So thanks. Yeah, so I am, as Brian introduced, editor-in-chief of Cinematic Reel. I've been writing now almost 10 years, actually. So growing into film, I've been a cinephile since I can remember. I remember my first movie experience going to the theater. Coming from a single home, my mom used to take me to the movies a lot. And a lot of the memories that I have growing up is just living in a movie theater, watching things like Home Alone 2. That was one of the, I remember going to the movies when Home Alone 2 came out, and such a random movie that stayed, you know, childhood memories aren't always something that live with you forever, but I remember going to Home Alone 2 with my mom, and for some reason I thought it would be an ideal thing to just like run out of the theater after the movie ended, and I was like 7 years old. And coming from a Cuban background, my mom was not too pleased for me running away from her in the middle of a theater and out the doors. For some reason, that memory's always stuck with me. Along with that, I remember growing up being excited for VHS releases and which one my mom would bring home. And a lot of the time, it would be, you know, things you may know, like for a kid growing up, Batman, stuff like that. But then I remember when I realized that I was into it a little bit more of just like entertainment value in terms of, and more of the studying of film. The first time I saw Scarface, which ironically led me into a pathway of Al Pacino, and Al Pacino is my favorite actor of all time. And it led me from Scarface to The Godfather, to The Godfather Part 2, which is my favorite performance of all time. And I'm sure we're going to get into it later. But yeah, my love of film has been there since I was a kid, and it's just continued to evolve over the past 30 years.
I just want to know more about what your mother was thinking when you ran out of the theater after Home Alone 2. That's a hilarious story. Wait, was the movie done and then you ran out, or did you run out during the movie?
I was like, I'm gonna Kevin McAllister my ass out of the theater and just like, what I was going to do, I had no idea, but I did it. And yeah, there's an end to that story that I will not mention on the podcast. I would definitely tell you off the line. And that's probably why I remember that so vividly.
That's hilarious. That's great. That's awesome. So you brought up how our topic today, Al Pacino. Al Pacino is your favorite actor of all time.
Correct.
And he's obviously regarded as one of the greats that we've ever had on screen. So why do you think he's received that status of being labeled as one of the greats of all time? Why do you think a lot of people love seeing Al Pacino on screen? And what makes you such a fan of Al Pacino?
For me, it's because it was my gateway. Gateway to movies that, I mean, The Godfather specifically are my two favorite. Godfather 1 and 2 and 1 are my two favorite films of all time. And I think they're, his 1970s, to me, it's one of the best decades for an actor of all time, just with some of the body of work that he achieved. While I think that when we get into the 80s and into the 90s, I think his career takes a shift, as opposed to like the counterpart to him was Robert De Niro in the 70s. And I think they both go in a little bit different directions as we get into the 80s and 90s. But I think the 70s laid the foundation of one of the greatest decades for one of the greatest actors of all time. I think Pacino showed that he can do different things and add such a nuance to all his performances that have, to me, continuously, even through his straight to VOD era of like the mid 2000s and late 2000s, I am always drawn to him. I will always go watch anything he'll do, whether it's Hot Garbage or whether it's The Irishman. I am there day one for whatever he does.
Yeah, I love Al Pacino as well. I definitely got into his career pretty early on into my love for film, definitely in my early teens, because that's where I watched The Godfather and Scarface and all these other movies that he did, primarily because when my dad was a kid, that's when Al Pacino's career really took off in the 70s. And my dad growing up, like a lot of his favorite movies are crime, gangster, mob films. And of course, Al Pacino is so pivotal to that genre. So naturally, my dad has a lot of respect for Al Pacino. But something I really love about Pacino is that, yes, obviously he's primarily known for acting in films revolving around crime and gangsters and mobs and what have you. But he's also proven himself to be a really great actor outside of that genre, which I really appreciate. He's done his fair share of comedies and romances and thrillers, and he's done it all, which I really respect about Pacino. I love that he's not a guy, and I say this all the time on this podcast, but it has to be said. I love that he's an actor that doesn't do one specific genre. I love that he's a guy of many different talents. Like, he could do comedies and dramas, and then he could do these gangster movies and everything. I really respect his range as a performer. And like you said, even though his career these last, I would say maybe like 20 years, hasn't been on the same level as the prime of his career, every once in a while, he still pumps out something like genuinely great. Not just say so bad that it's entertaining. Like, he could pump out something that's actually like fantastic, to where some of the work that he delivers now in his early 80s is on the same level as the work that he delivered when he was in his 30s. And that just comes to show the power of Al Pacino.
And name someone that can play a Puerto Rican and a Cuban.
I can't.
And I remember, I mean, we're going to get into Scarface later, and that was my gateway to Pacino. I remember when I saw my bringing up my mom again, she was like, oh, he gives that movie gives such a bad name. I'm Cuban. They give a bad name to Cubans. And, you know, years later, I'm like, no, it doesn't. I have not offended at all by that performance. I think he's pretty damn great in it, despite of like him, obviously, that is not a Cuban at all.
Right, right. No, he is great in that movie, and we'll definitely be talking about it later on. But now, segueing into our list, it's time that we talk about our top five favorite films starring Al Pacino. So, David, kicking it over to you, what is your number five favorite Al Pacino film of all time?
Alrighty, so this is a tough one because there was a... You mentioned before what you do with specific parts, and we'll save that for later. So I kind of tweak things up a little bit. So my number five was either between two movies. It was either between Serpico and Dog Day Afternoon. The reason I went with Dog Day Afternoon is because Dog Day Afternoon has never wavered in terms of how great I think it is. Serpico, as I've gotten older, has progressively gone up my Pacino ranking, just because it's more of a subdued performance from him. It's not out there. It's not showy. But I think he's excellent in it. But Dog Day Afternoon, I think just... it's peak of his powers, per se. Because after Dog Day Afternoon, it's kind of when things start dropping a little bit. It's towards the end of the 70s, or mid-70s. But then he goes on to Bobby Deerfield, Cruising, Arthur. So I think Dog Day Afternoon was kind of the last of the pure peak for him of the 70s. It's a very interesting performance because of who he's playing. And I think Pacino playing that character today may not go over well. But I do think that he is able to capture the raw emotion of what Sonny is going through. It reminds me of, and it's a very weird comparison. I remember reading this comic, and I'm not sure if you know this. It's called The Killing Joke. And
never heard of it.
No, hey, you never know. But how one bad day can change a life's trajectory. And I think this is Sonny's bad day. Of every decision he makes throughout, it's just the wrong decision. And I think Pacino evokes that perfectly. Plus, it also is one of the first. Pacino's very clip worthy. He's very meme worthy, and I think this is one of the Mount Rushmore of his peak version of memes with Attica, Attica, Attica. And I do also, John Cazale is tremendous in this movie. I will mention John Cazale. This is not a John Cazale podcast, but I will mention him again later. I think those two together, such a mesh beautifully, and I think their chemistry together works so well, not just in The Godfathers, but in Dog Day Afternoon. But yeah, that is why it is my numero five.
So I'm going to pass on this film. It's a little higher on my list. Mm-hmm. I cannot wait to talk about it when I get to it. So number five for me, I was telling you off air that what I did with my list is that each film is directed by somebody else. So there's no repeats of directors on my list. So number five, I think it's interesting because the filmmaker behind this film is very respected. He's definitely gotten a lot of his films labeled as some of the best of all time by like cinephiles and film writers and film bros. It's very interesting how people don't talk about this film as much as his other films. Is it his best film? No. Is it his worst film? No. It's not upper tier, but it's also not a bad film. I'm trying to play around with this. So number five for me, it's so funny because the guy that directed this, and this is going to give it away right away, he's about to win, finally, his first Oscar in just a few weeks. Number five is Insomnia, yeah. Directed by Christopher Nolan.
Great pick.
I think Insomnia is super underrated, especially when you look at the filmography of Christopher Nolan. This was super early in his career. This was only his third feature film. This was right after the success of Memento that got all this acclaim critically and was an Oscar nominee. And everyone was like, oh, what's Christopher Nolan going to do next? Oh, he's going to do this thriller starring Al Pacino and Robin Williams and Hilary Swank. Three Oscar winners in one film. I mean, come on, that's so exciting. So Al Pacino plays a cop. He is sent to Alaska to solve this case of this murder where this girl was murdered by a world-renowned author who's played by Robin Williams in one of his most chilling performances ever. And he teams up with Hilary Swank, who is a cop that is based in the city of Alaska. And throughout the entire movie, I mean, the title of the movie is Insomnia because they're in a city where the sun doesn't set. So naturally, it causes sleep problems for Pacino's character. But he's also battling certain demons that happened to him prior to the movie. And then something happens during this movie. I'm not going to spoil it in case anyone out there hasn't seen the movie. And you should. I mean, it's really good. Something happens that makes it even more crazy for Pacino's character. And it's definitely a more subtle performance from Pacino. He's not as loud and bombastic in this movie as he is with other films. I mean, David, you brought up how, you know, Pacino's known for like meme-worthy content where he like screams from the top of his lungs and everything. But this is a very laid-back performance from him. And I think he does a great job here. And I really love the sequences where it's him and Robin Williams going at each other. I really think that that is incredible work. It's really awesome that Christopher Nolan got to work with both of these guys. I mean, I feel like nobody would have ever predicted Robin Williams would work with someone like Christopher Nolan. And I think it was probably cool that if you were a fan of Robin Williams and then seeing this movie when it came out, it was so cool seeing him, you know, play the bad guy, but not in a comedic way. Like, he was a genuinely terrifying dude. But similar to Pacino, Robin Williams was like so restrained. He wasn't like a kooky evil villain. Like, I'm just going to use this example since you brought up this character. He wasn't like a Joker where he was like, you know, over the top and everything. Obviously it worked for the Joker, but I really liked this side of Robin Williams. And it's also funny how in the same year he did 1 Hour Photo, which is another chilling Robin Williams performance.
I
was
going to bring that up. I love that he has those two back to back.
Yeah, it was such a great year for him. But yeah, I really like Insomnia a lot. It's kind of sad that considering how popular Christopher Nolan is, nobody really talks about this film. I mean, yes, obviously, it's not as rewatchable as some of his other films, and I get that, but I really find this to be quite a cool film, and I believe it's the only film that Christopher Nolan directed that he didn't write. I could be very wrong with that. I know there's one film that he didn't write, and I think it might be this one. I could be wrong, but Yeah, I really like this movie a lot. And it's interesting how it's also a remake of a film. A remake of a film I have not seen, which I owe it to myself to watch the original. But yeah, Insomnia is really great. And, you know, picking my number five was tough as well. And I wanted to put something that wasn't, you know, the most cliched pick. I wanted to pick something that was definitely out of left field when ranking Al Pacino films. So Insomnia is my number five. Are you going to pass, or is this not on your list?
It is not on my list. I remember it was my introduction to Christopher Nolan. I saw this before I saw Memento. And the reason I saw this was because Pacino was in it. And I remember that Tribeca Film Festival, it premiered at Tribeca, which for someone that covers Tribeca with me as well, like, it's, imagine just having a film like Insomnia, Christopher Nolan's Insomnia, premiering at Tribeca. It's just like wild.
I know, that's nuts. Pacino, Robin Williams, Hilary Swank.
I remember this movie having a very effective trailer, but I do think that Pacino fell, especially during the early 2000s into the mid 2000s, where there is a mid movie twist or end movie twist that always ends in the way that Insomnia does.
Yeah.
And I think that's a trope that, as a fan of his, I wish wasn't as consistent for him as it was. But I think he, like you said, it's a more subtle, subdued, and it's kind of more internal of a performance where you see him mentally breaking down as he is unable to sleep. So, and like you said, the Robin Williams angle of this, I think, also sold it to me more, because it's like, Robin Williams is playing a villain? Like, what? How does this look like? And what it looks like is, this is the gateway to 1 hour photo. This is, like you said, this is a 1 hour photo. It just like just show the range that Robin Williams had. But yeah, Pacino, during this time, it was, if I remember correctly, this is the run for him after this was right after The Insider, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So working with Michael Mann and then working with Christopher Nolan is kind of like, well, nice little 1-2 punch there to kick off the new century. But yeah, no, I like the movie. But it's not, you know, performance wise or movie wise, it's not in my top five, because I'm very out there with this Pacino five, just because of, I've seen so much of his stuff. As you'll see with my next pick, he's probably not in the top tier of Al Pacino performances, but it is for me. But yeah, right. I do love Insomnia very much.
Yeah, it's really good. And when I went to Alaska last year for the first time, all I kept thinking about was this movie. And I was worried that when I knew I was going to Alaska, I was worried I was going to go to a place where, you know, the sun doesn't set. And thankfully, that wasn't the case where I was. So yeah, I love the film. It's very underrated. It's definitely, I mean, there's an argument to be made that this and The Prestige are definitely Nolan's most underrated films, but I feel like The Prestige has a bigger following than Insomnia. So I feel like Insomnia is definitely the film that doesn't get talked about as much.
Yeah,
when it comes to Pacino's filmography or Nolan's filmography,
you're 100% right. I remember when Oppie came out this year. You know, everyone was throwing out their Nolan rankings, and Insomnia was always at the bottom. Like, what? Like,
yeah, like
come on. Yeah, so I'm with you there.
Yeah. So now going into our number fours, what is your pick?
It's The Devil's Advocate. I'm totally kidding. All right, if we don't get a chance to talk about The Devil's Advocate, I wouldn't be a real Pacino fan. I did want to mention on Devil's Advocate, it is one of my favorite ridiculous performance of his career, maybe ever. Have you ever seen that movie?
Have I seen it? I think I've seen it once a long time ago. The next time I watch it, it'll definitely feel like the first time watching it.
Pacino was on, he, Donnie Brasco, and Devil's Advocate. Those are like back to back to back. Pacino was on like hella cocaine in The Devil's Advocate. And I won't even spoil how out there that performance is. But my real answer is Scarface. It's the one that got me right into Pacino. I remember, do I genuinely think it's a great performance? I honestly think he's pretty damn great in it. I do remember watching this movie at 13 years old, and I think I'm a big hip hop fan. So especially like old 90s hip hop, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with like 90s hip hop, but Scarface was pretty much beloved by 90s 2000s hip hop. And I remember there was a Mobb Deep song called Mine or It's Mine, and they sampled the opening of Scarface, and that I was like, I early days of Google, I was just like, what is this? Where is this beat from? And I saw When to See Scarface. I rented it. I remember it was the first two VHS movie I ever saw. I think Pacino is doing a lot here. It's not nuanced at all. It's kind of I put Scarface as kind of like the gateway into where we land with Heat. I think the Corleone Pacino was kind of still there, but then by the end of Scarface, where he's like pulling out an AK-47 and just like coked up, just completely killing all these the Bolivians that are trying to kill him. I think by the end of that movie, we are moving into a different stage of Pacino, the over the top, showy, out there Al. But I do think the accent is iconic to me. I remember when I was younger, and I'm a little under the weather right now, so I'm not even going to try to embarrass your show by trying to do my old Tony Montana accent. I used to like be able to do that on brand, and I think that Scarface is, I think it's a very good movie in terms of what the themes of the movie that Oliver Stone was trying to gateway. I get it. I actually had family that came over on the Mario Harbor, so I do understand what Oliver Stone was trying to do there. I don't think he completely hits to especially to the Cuban population. We were not all criminals in the, as he basically portrayed there, but I think Pacino is excellent in the movie. I think Stephen Bauer as Manny, I think he's phenomenal in the movie. I think it kind of it balances out the fact that Pacino's not Cuban to have an actual Cuban as his best friend. And I just think it just falls into the idea of like what happens when someone completely loses trust in everybody, even the person that has been by his side. And I always feel like the end of that movie when Pacino is, spoiler alert for a movie that's 41 years old, when Tony Montana is killed at the end of the movie, it's very apropos that he shot from the back. Literally a few minutes after in the movie, he kills the person that has always had his back and probably would have had his back at that very moment. I think the ending of that movie is so it's juxtaposed perfectly with what he does to Manny, because the only person that ever had his back, he kills. And it's like you can have a certain jealousy towards your sister, and that's the reason he kills Manny. But at the end of the day, if I had a sister and it would be, and she marries someone that is my best friend, someone that's been by my side, I'd be like, hey, let's, sure. And it just shows how by what cocaine does to did to him and how little he trusted anyone. And like I said, the thematically, when he shot in the back at the end, like now is much more into film criticism and just reading films. I think it's beautiful. Also, immaculate score, when I throw that shout out there.
So, I almost said insomnia again. Just comes to show I'm not wide awake. Scarface is not on my list. I actually really like Scarface as well. Obviously, from my perspective, I could recognize its flaws. I could recognize that it's definitely not the perfect film that it thinks it might be. But I think in terms of gangster crime films, it is. There's a reason why it's talked about the way it is. Like, there's a reason why it is regarded as one of the best. It's interesting. While you were talking about it, I was looking up some facts about it. At one point, Sidney Lumet, who's obviously collaborated with Pacino many times, he was in talks to direct this movie. I would have been very curious to
Completely different
see
movie.
his spin on this. I do like De Palma. I admittedly haven't seen everything he's done, but everything I have seen from him, I do like. Which isn't a lot, so it's not like, oh, I've seen everything he's done, but this isn't my favorite thing from him, but it's really good. And regarding Pacino's performance, is it over the top? Yes. Is it a little ridiculous? Yes. But is it a good performance? I would say so. I think he's very good in the movie. And there are many lines that, like you said, might be meme-worthy, of course, to say hello to my little friend. But one of the moments that I always quote with some of my friends is the scene in the car when the one guy's about to kill the woman and her kid. He's like, don't fuck with me! I told you no kids!
By the way, do you know, as a breaking, do you know who that man is?
Yeah, okay. That's Hector Salamanca. When I first saw the movie, it was like right. I don't know if I had seen Breaking Bad at that point. I might have. I don't remember. But I remember either the second time or third time I watched Scarface. I'm like, wait, why do I know that man? And it's so funny because Stephen Bauer was later on Breaking Bad as well. So that's really funny and everything. Yeah, I like Scarface a lot. I mean, it's obviously one of the most iconic Pacino films. But in terms of my top five, it's definitely right outside the top five. Mm-hmm. I like it a lot, but I can understand why there are people that don't like it. Fittingly enough, another Al Pacino starring remake. Like, this is not... Al Pacino likes to star in his remakes every so often.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen the original Scarface?
No, this is the only one I've seen.
It's very good. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I do want to check that one out. I do want to check that one out. And I know they've been trying to remake it.
I hope not.
With, like, multiple people, but, like, what's the point?
Do you know that in 2003, they greenlit a sequel
to this? Scarface.
And...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the... Man, I'm dating myself. So, the rapper Cuban Lynx was going to play Tony Montana's son. Even though Elvira, I don't even know if I don't even think she could get pregnant because, like, that scene at the dinner table where he was like, your womb is so polluted, I can't even have a fucking little baby with her.
Right.
But yeah, that was the premise of the sequel. I don't even remember who was going to direct it, but I remember that being a big thing around the 20th anniversary of the movie. Thank God it never happened.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's good that didn't happen.
Because they did end up, like, around that same time, they greenlit a prequel to Carlito's Way.
That's so bizarre. That's just so weird to me. No, I do think it's interesting how they tried to do that. And then they were trying to make a remake of it, and Antoine Fuqua at one point was supposed to direct it. Who else was supposed to direct it? Luca Guadagnino at one
point. Now that I would love to see. Like, what that looks like would be...
Luca Guadagnino directing and the Coen brothers writing. I mean, that would have been very interesting. And who was attached? Diego Luna. Was supposed... I would have liked that. That would have been a good... That would have been good, I think.
The curious thing would be, is it... What direction they would take? Because if you see the original, it has nothing to do with... the remake, the 83 and the 32 or 33, whenever it came out, they have no correlation except the title.
Right. Yeah. I really wonder what direction Luca Guadagnino would have done. But honestly, like, it would have been cool to see him direct something that's involved with crime and gangsters and everything. That would have been really sick because he's never done a film like that before. And I mean, he's a man of, like, that guy does everything. Mm-hmm. Like, he literally does everything, which I really respect about him. That's another filmmaker who doesn't stick to just one specific genre and everything, which I love about him.
For sure.
And now, my number four is the most recent film on this list, and it's, of course, The Irishman. I think The Irishman, in terms of the last 20 years, to me, this is the best film that Pacino has been in. I feel like that isn't a cliched answer, but there's a reason why a lot of us celebrate The Irishman. I'll never forget, like, just hearing about this film and following this film for a very long time. It was like 10 years of being like, oh, Scorsese's gonna reteam with De Niro, and then he's gonna team with Pacino for the first time, and he's gonna get Pesci out of retirement and everything, which was so exciting to hear. Like, the three giants, not just in the crime gangster genre, but three acting giants are going to be working together in a film directed by one of the great filmmakers of all time. And I was worried. Part of me was worried going into this movie. I'm like, one of this doesn't live up to the hype. One of this film isn't as good as I want it to be. And I saw it at the world premiere at the New York Film Festival. Really, the only reason why I went to the festival that year was to be one of the first people in the world to see The Irishman. And I'm so glad that I got that opportunity. It's one of my all-time favorite theater-going experiences. And the film ended up being my second favorite film of 2019. And I've seen it so many times, which is saying a lot considering that this is a beefy movie. It's 3.5 hours long. And it's beefy. Long. And it feels long, but it earns that lengthy runtime. I mean, I've talked about The Irishman so much on this podcast that I'm not going to repeat too much. But to talk about Pacino specifically, it's a very... I remember when I walked out of the movie, his performance was... It was really him and Pesci that I was talking about the most when I got out of the movie. Like, these were two different sides of these actors that we hadn't seen. Pacino was just so... It was a very beautiful performance as Jimmy Hoffa. And, I mean, everything that you love about Pacino is here in this performance. It's a moving performance. It's a funny performance. It's a scary performance at times. There's all these different emotions sprinkling throughout this performance that... The reasons why people love Al Pacino are what you see when you watch his work in The Irishman. And I mean, again, some meme-worthy moments. I mean, the sequence in the office where he yells at everybody, he's like, "You dumb motherfuckers." So good. I'm going to prison. You understand? I'm going to jail. Oh my God. And then he just storms out of the office. "I didn't even see you there. How am I supposed to talk to you if I didn't even see you there?" It's, oh my God, so, so good. And some of the final moments of Jimmy Hoffa in this movie are so heartbreaking. I mean, I've talked so much about how the last hour of this movie is some of the most devastating that Scorsese has brought to life in his career. And I really love the work that Pacino does here. But I also just think that this film is just so masterful. It's a reflective piece for Scorsese, and it's also pretty reflective for the three actors in this movie. It's a look back on what they have brought to the world of cinema, and it feels like an ode to all of their work that they had given us throughout the years, which I really respect. And, you know, I might have had this conversation with you. I probably have. Like, obviously, Scorsese went on to make Flower Moon after this, but... If this had been Scorsese's last film, it would have felt like a very fitting swan song for him. I mean, the last shot of this movie is one of the best last shots to any movie I maybe have ever seen. And I know that that's saying a lot, but it really is one of the most impactful final shots to any movie I've ever watched. I was kind of slightly rooting for Pacino to win an Oscar for this. I thought it was a very cool nomination that he got nominated, like, literally everywhere. Same with Pesci. I would have been okay if either of them walked away with the Oscars, because both of them are incredible. I mean, I've talked a lot on this podcast about how criminal it is that De Niro missed the Oscar 5. We don't really have to get into that since this is a Pacino podcast. But yeah, I love The Irishman so much. It's absolutely wonderful. I saw it three times in theaters. And then I watched it immediately when it came to Netflix. And then I bought the Criterion day one. It came out during the sale, which, thank goodness. But even I would have happily dropped the full price on the Criterion for this movie. But yeah, I love The Irishman. It's absolutely fantastic. It's my number four. Are you going to pass, or is this not on your list?
This is you said everything I probably would have said. It's my number three, actually, as well.
Nice. So talk a little bit about why it's your number three. I mean, I'm sure, like you said, there may not be much more to add, but why do you love The Irishman as well?
I didn't know he had this in him anymore. I want to start with that. Like you, I was following this project for a long, long time. And honestly, I questioned someone's mortality. Oh my God, I hope they all like make it. Because they just kept getting postponed. And I'm like, yeah, come on, we gotta get this out there.
Someone give him the money, please, to make it. Like, come on.
Seriously. Like, but all jokes aside, like, it's my third favorite Scorsese movie. It's my probably my one or two of the decade. It's Social Network and Irishman fighting neck
that's,
and neck.
That's a good top two. That's a very good top two.
It's my favorite movie of 2019, and it didn't start that way. I remember seeing it. I was actually at that same screening you were for the world premiere of NIFF, at NIFF, and I also, like you, was taken aback by the last hour of that movie, because it's very weird for someone that's not even 40 years old to say this, but when I first saw The Irishman, I feel like The Irishman is a film that if you really like glue yourself to what Scorsese is trying to say, it's not just about them as old men, but I just think it's just a movie that questions your own mortality and what you feel not you that you've given to this world, or but how long you defend those in this world. Because the scene you said, you talk about that last hour, and this is not a Pacino scene, but I will bring up a Pacino scene in a moment. It's towards the end of the movie. They're in the cops or whatever agents they are. They're talking to Bobby, and he still won't give anyone up. And then the cops go to him. They're like, "Everyone's dead. Everyone's gone." And it just—I don't know, man. Just something that small just like broke me. It just broke me. It's
I
just like
know.
at the end of this day, at the end of this life, we are, you know, we may all be alone, and then it
Yeah.
segues to that final moment of the movie where he harkens back to Hoffa when, you know, can you leave the door a little bit open? That moment to me, it's like he will always regret what he did, but he and it goes. Then I coincide that with Pacino's moment or Hoffa's moment when he. I think personally, watching that scene, I've seen The Irishman about 7, 8 times at this point, and despite the length, it really doesn't really bother me.
Yeah.
I think when they walk in that house, Hoffa knows what's going to happen, but he doesn't want to believe it. He doesn't want, and
Yeah. That's what makes it
it's
even
such
more
an
devastating, is that he knows what's gonna happen.
it's a lot of people that don't like The Irishman, and there are a lot more people that should be out there that don't like The Irishman. I think they just walked in there with expectations that they're going to get Goodfellas, but I think this is his quote unquote gangster version of silence. It's more meditative.
Yeah, yeah.
You're really self-examining a lot of like individuality and what and I think that's what he was trying to do here. I think he molded
Yeah.
the genre that people know him for and just molded into what types of films he's making towards the end of his career. And I think, yeah, The Irishman, a lot of, I love Killers of the Flower Moon. I think it's a very, very good film. But I don't think anything that he does the rest of his career, or even since probably the 2000s, has left me more numb than The Irishman. And Pacino's performance is just, I like you, if Brad Pitt wasn't there, I would be very happy with a Pacino Oscar win. I honestly, as someone that believes in Oscar narratives, I think if Brad Pitt wasn't there, the idea of like, let's give Pacino the Oscar for the right role this time instead of the role that he did with, I think that could have been very much in
Right.
play there.
Yeah, and I think that if Pacino had won the Oscar for this, I feel like it would be one of the more celebrated Oscar wins of recent memory. I feel like I don't think people are angry that Brad Pitt won. I mean, I love that movie and I love that performance. He definitely wouldn't have been my pick to win the Oscar. But you know, what Pacino did in this movie is just really next level. I really like how you said this is kind of like the gangster version of silence, where it's very meditative. And I like that saying. That's a good, that should be on the 4K Criterion, the 4K release, the meditative version of silence. The gangster version of silence. No, I mean, it really is a fantastic film. I mean, I've seen it so many times as well. And yeah, it's long and everything, and it does, and it definitely feels long, but to me personally, it doesn't feel 3.5 hours. I mean, it's some of the fastest 3.5 hours. I mean, the last hour, I think, intentionally goes very slow, which I really appreciate. I mean, that's just the power of Velma being like the best editor ever. And yeah, I love that movie so much. And the fact that it was a goose egg at the Oscars is disgusting. It's disgusting.
And honestly, like one last comment. The CGI does not bother me as much as the only scene that really bothers me is where and it has nothing to do with Pacino, when Bobby is like kicking the dude and he's like
Oh God,
going
that
in
was
slow
so
motion.
bad.
But like, you know, outside of that, I was perfectly fine with the CGI.
Yeah,
It's
I
not
mean,
great, but
when
it's also like not the worst thing. It didn't ruin the movie.
I mean, when I first saw the movie, like, it definitely took me a while to get accustomed to the CGI and everything. Like, could they have done a better job? Probably, but was it the worst CGI? No, it wasn't. It was honestly not the worst thing that I've ever seen. But yeah, the kicking thing. I mean, that's a meme worthy thing, not from Pacino, but yeah, Irishman is great. It's actually my second favorite Scorsese film. I mean, that's how high it is for me. Like,
Nice. Good to see
it's oh,
it up there for someone else too.
it's just it's just so good. I mean, it's like if people really think that the only reason why that movie isn't great is because of the runtime, I mean, come on. Like, come on. Lord of the Rings is like the same runtime as The Irishman. It's like 10 minutes shorter than The Irishman. Like, calm down, everyone. I mean, I know it's not fair to compare the Lord of the Rings to The Irishman, but, you know,
interesting,
that's another lengthy movie.
Interesting conversation to have as, in terms of what if possibilities if this movie came out when it was supposed to in 2018, if it wins Best Picture over Green Book.
You know, that's a very good point.
Point. Not related to Pacino at all, but I recently this week rewatched JFK, and I just look at the potential of, like, if this comes out 1 year later, does it beat Unforgiven? I think it does. It's just like,
yeah, that's
when you're 1 year, when you're 1 year off on certain movies, it's just like, wow, it really makes you think about
that. I know that's always an interesting conversation for him, but it's like, oh, if this film came out this year, would it have been like, I mean, unrelated to Pacino, we'll transition into my number three, The Iron Claw. If that did not come out in 2023 and they got saved for 2024, it probably would be like a huge awards contender. Zac Efron would be nominated for Best Actor. That would, you know, we could all have good things and Zac Efron would be up for Best Actor, but unfortunately, we're not. We can't have good things. Your child agrees.
Yes, she does. Sorry about that.
So, going into my number three, I feel like this is your number two. I feel like this would be your number two. And if I'm wrong, then I embarrass myself on air. My number three is Heat, directed by Michael Mann. I love Heat so much. I recently rewatched it because I just did a Michael Mann episode for this podcast. And I had seen it before a long time ago in high school. And I remember really, really, really loving it. But because it had been like almost 10 years since I had watched it, I owed it to myself to do a rewatch. And since I was doing a Michael Mann episode, I'm like, all right, let's give it a rewatch. And oh my God, I mean, you want to talk about another example of smooth 3 hours on screen? I mean, this movie does that so beautifully. It's probably so I like to differentiate best and favorite sometimes. This isn't my favorite Michael Mann film, but I think this is the best film of Michael Mann's filmography, tied with the other Pacino collaboration in The Insider. I think those are his two best films. But what I love about Heat so much is that, again, like similar to a lot of these other movies, the usage of the 3 hours feels so earned for this movie. There's not an ounce of fat to be found in this movie. Everything flies by very quickly. Some of the smoothest 3 hours that I have ever seen are utilized here in this film. And something that a lot of people love about Michael Mann is his usage of how he directs his films and how he shoots his films and edits his films. And the filmmaking here is really fantastic. And I don't want to spend too much time on this, but the shootout scene is so phenomenal. It's so incredible when you watch it and you ask yourself, how did they pull this off? And the fact that they pulled it off so beautifully is just so impressive. And Pacino's performance, I thought, was so, so great. You know, another example of meme-worthy content, and I tend to forget. I forgot a lot about the meme-worthy content in this movie. So, like, the sequence where he's just screaming at Hank Azaria.
Don't you worry. I got you.
She's got a great ass, and you got your head all the way up it! Oh, my God. Just, it's so great. I love it so much. No, but in all seriousness, I mean, Heat is really fantastic. And Michael Mann, he's a filmmaker who, unfortunately, his most recent film was a massive disappointment, in my opinion. But he has more hits than misses, and this is definitely one of his best. Pacino's great. De Niro's great. Shout out to Val Kilmer. He also kicks ass in this movie. Everyone does a great job here. And that diner sequence is one of the best acted scenes of both of these guys' filmography. It's so funny that if you watch that scene, like, on its own, you would never think that it's a part of this movie. You would think it's just something else, like, just like a straight up drama. But the fact that it's a part of this crime film is really exciting. And yeah, Heat is masterful. It's so incredible. Watching it again a few weeks ago, I'm just like blown away that we have a film like this. And there's a reason why it's as celebrated and beloved as it is. This is a film where it's very hard to find people, at least for me, that don't at least like the movie. I feel like everybody I know loves this movie, which is saying a lot because people are like, I hate really long movies, but I love Heat. So, and Heat, it deserves that long runtime, like I said. I mean, yeah, there's really not much I could say about this movie that has been said already, especially a few weeks ago when I recorded my Michael Mann episode. But yeah, Heat is my number three. If this is not on your list, I'm going to be so freaking shocked. I'm going to be so surprised. So tell us what your second favorite Al Pacino film of all time is.
It's Heat.
I knew it. I knew it. Let's go.
I mean, I'm wearing my Heat hoodie on. I'm wearing my Heat hoodie and everything right now. So Heat is in my top 12 favorite movies of all time. So you're spot on with that guess. Yeah, you nailed everything. I before I get into the Pacino of it all, because I have a lot to say about like Al in this. I think this is Michael Mann's best. That and Thief, they're always fighting for that top spot, but I think Heat is like,
yeah, Thief was really good. I enjoyed that one as well.
I do that. I want to talk about that conversation in the diner, because I think it doesn't just like feel like it's maybe from a different movie, but in a way it doesn't. I think this does feel like it belongs in Heat, because I think Heat does remove the idea of like evil and good, black, that's black and white. There's like, it brings in that shade of gray where these two guys, they happen to, I guess in some aspects, bad luck into being a thief, and the other one happened to be a cop. In another world, it could have been reversed. Both these guys have kind of the same vibe in terms of what their personalities are. And I think the movie does capture that beautifully. But Pacino, all right. So this is it. This is where he leaves and he never comes back to until The Irishman. He leaves planet Earth and he just like, you know, I don't know what he was on in this movie, but I love every second of it. She's got a great ass. That's the top one, but it's also the most random ones when he's like, some guy's talking to him. I think he's trying to find out some information. He's like, give me all you got. My favorite subtle one is with him and Justine, his girlfriend in the movie. By the way, Natalie Portman, not in it a lot, but she's pretty damn good in like some of the stuff.
She is really good at it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and my daughter agrees with that. So the scene that makes me chuckle, because I've seen Heat so many times that at this point I know like the majority of this movie by heart. The scene that makes me chuckle now, and it's very small, it's when he comes home and Justine's giving him shit for like his dinner, and then Pacino, like Vincent, he's like, by the way, one of the best movie names ever, Vincent Hanna, it's like an elite level movie name, when he's like, Justine, I'm sorry that the goddamn chicken got cold. For some reason, that shit has
only he can make a line like that work.
It's so fucking random, and I cannot stop laughing every time I watch Heat. The other one it's not meme worthy, but if next time you watch Heat, pay attention to this. Vincent Hanna never says bye when he speaks to someone on the phone. He just hangs up on everyone, hero, villain. It doesn't fucking matter. My guy is just like, I got what I want. I'm hanging up. Another really small, subtle Pacinoism, I guess I can call it, is when they're made, where Bobby, Val, they're like all finding out, getting basically they're like camped out up top, and he's like, "We've been made. The police department, LAPD." And I'm like, "Oh, Al." So everything in Heat is just like, just phenomenal, phenomenal stuff. It's my favorite heist film of all time. I just think it just, like you said, for a 3-hour movie, the pacing of it is just so crisp, so crisp. And I do think it's set, each hour has a nice set piece to kind of like bring you back in.
Yeah,
the first part
absolutely.
Of the Heat opens with that heist with Wayne Grow. The middle of it is kind of like when you first they try to do that attempted heist, and you have that beautiful shot of Pacino looking into the television, and then it's like a I don't know what type of vision that is, but you see Bobby them staring at each other for the first time. Then
yeah,
the third hour,
yeah.
You have the you end the second hour with the bank heist, and then the conversation between both of them. It's like I think it's paced perfectly with some beautiful set pieces and in each hour. And
absolutely,
the Moby song at the end of this movie, God moving over his face and walk. I like, dude. I love it, and it just coincides perfectly where Bobby's like, I told you I was never going back, and they're just holding hands as he dies, and the screen, the score's playing, the song's playing in the background, and it just fades to black with Pacino stare. Oh my god. Yeah, this I can talk about Heat so much. The biggest travesty in Heat is that it was nominated for 0 Oscars, not even sound, mixing.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
The movie should have won Best Picture, should have won Director. I don't think it should have won actor, but I would have taken Pacino and De Niro nominated for actor in that. Definitely should have won sound. I think that year was probably one of the biggest travesties, like in Oscar history, that movie getting 0 Oscar nomination. And it kind of coincides with, like, outside of The Insider, they really don't like Michael Mann too much. But
yeah,
Heat is just like on another level for me. It's so great.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought up that Moby Neal drop, because one thing that I really love about Michael Mann in particular, and I'm sure you agree with this, is his usage of music, score, and songs. Like, the way he tends to open up his movies or close out his movies, like, I'm not as high on... I mean, I like this movie. I like Miami Vice, but opening Miami Vice with Numb Encore is, like, one of the greatest ways of opening a film ever. It's just like, oh, you see the logo, and then all of a sudden it transitions to Linkin Park and Jay-Z, and you're like, oh, this shouldn't work, but leave it to Michael Mann to pull it off. Yeah, Heat is extraordinary. It's incredible.
Let me ask
you,
so you just covered Michael Mann. What was your thoughts on it's completely off topic. What was your thoughts on Miami Vice?
I liked Miami Vice a lot. I enjoyed it. I think if I watch it again, I'll probably like it a little bit more. I think I was expecting to, like, flat out love it, because I know that even though it wasn't super acclaimed when it came out, it's definitely garnered a huge appreciation and following over the last few years. But I did enjoy it, and some of the sexiest things that I've ever seen on screen are seen in Miami Vice with Colin Farrell and Gon Chi. Yeah. I mean, oh my god, like that, like I had to like fan myself a little too much during those moments. But yeah, I liked Miami Vice. I didn't love it though, but it's definitely again, like I said, I think Michael Mann has more hits than misses. Like,
I agree.
Really, to me, the only miss is Ferrari, but I didn't hate Ferrari. I was disappointed with it. Like, there's things about Ferrari that I did like, but I wanted to love Ferrari a lot more than I did. But
yeah, no,
hey,
the reason I asked about Miami Vice, because I guess just I'm biased towards Michael Mann, and
yeah,
I love the TV show Miami Vice. I think that show is phenomenal. But I'm with you. I like Miami Vice, but the reason I brought it up is because, and I'm glad you mentioned Colin Farrell, because that it may be the biggest like swag move ever is, do you like mojitos? And then the next scene they're in Cuba. I'm like, come on, man, come on. There's no
like,
way to do it.
Come on.
There's no way to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Man, yeah. Okay, number two. Spoiler alert for the remainder of this list. This is your number one. you kind of gave away your number one at the start of the episode, but I mean, I feel like universally a lot of people put this as their number one for Al Pacino. So, as you kind of hinted at, whenever it comes to franchises, what I generally do with this podcast, and I tell this to the guests, is that we usually only put one of those films from said franchise on the list. However, I made an exception with this one, because there's an argument to be made that is still going on to this day, 50 years later, of which of these two films is the better one of the two. And I can't pick. It's hard. There's a day where I'm like, oh, this one's better, or that one's better. It's tough. Really, there's no wrong answer. I mean, there really isn't no wrong answer. So if you could tell what I'm alluding to, my number two, and this is the only time in the podcast that we will ever do this, I'm combining The Godfather and The Godfather Part 2 as my second favorite Al Pacino film of all time. I mean, honestly, like, if you were to ask me the best thing that Pacino has been in, I would say it's these two films. I really think that these are the two best things that he's ever been a part of. The reason why it's not my favorite, I'll explain that when I get to my number one. But, I mean, what could you say about The Godfather and The Godfather Part 2 that hasn't been said already? I mean, look, these are two of the most celebrated films ever made. The Godfather Part 2 turns 50 this year, which is absolutely nuts that the movie is half a century old. It's absolutely wild. And I really hope that they do some sort of re-release for it this year. They really need to. They did it for The Godfather a few years ago. And they definitely should do it for this one as well. See, the sirens agree with me. The sirens agree that there needs to be a re-release of The absolutely. Godfather Part 2. I really don't know where to begin with these movies. I really don't. I think that what Francis Ford Coppola does is unbelievable by taking this odyssey of this family involved with crime and makes you actually care about them. You know, he doesn't paint them as good people, which I really appreciate. He paints them as flawed people. Like, all these people are flawed, which I really respect and appreciate. I always love it whenever I watch a movie where you could tell that the director and the writer aren't painting the characters as, like, good people or bad people. Like, you recognize they've done bad things, but you also recognize that they're not entirely bad people. And the character arc of Michael Corleone is one of the great character arcs ever put to screen, because when you watch that first Godfather and then you get to the end of the Godfather, you wouldn't even think it's the same person. Like, you watch for 3 hours and just to see the change in Michael Corleone, it's incredible. And then obviously what happens in The Godfather Part 2, and then later on in The Godfather 3. Pacino as Corleone is incredible. I mean, this was really the film that got people to know who Al Pacino is. I mean, this film, the first Godfather, helped launch a lot of these actors' careers at the stardom. I mean, nobody really knew who James Caan was. Nobody really knew who Robert Duvall was, I believe. John Cazale, of course, and then Diane Keane and so many other talented actors. And then, again, I'm trying to, like, I'm stuttering my words because I really don't know what else to say that hasn't been said. I love both of these films equally. They're both masterpieces. Which have I seen more? I've seen the first one more times than the second one in its entirety. But I do love both of them very much. I mean, they're both masterpieces. They're both 5 stars in my book. They're two of the greatest films ever put to screen. It's very crazy how both of these films won Best Picture. You know, it's a rarity that an original and then its sequel ends up winning the Oscar for Best Picture. So I think it's really exciting that The Godfather 1 and 2 got to do that. And The Godfather 2 is one of two sequels to win Best Picture, obviously the other being Return of the King, which is arguably also one of the greatest sequels ever put to screen. And I'm actually watching that again in a few hours after we get off this recording, which I'm very excited to do. I love the Godfather films. It's incredible what Francis Ford Coppola and Mario Puzo do, and then the entire cast. And Pacino really is unbelievable as Michael Corleone. I would say I feel bad if I say I like one more than the other. It's tough, like I said, but I would say I prefer the first, but I think the second is better, if that makes sense. It's tough to say. They're both incredible films, so really, like, there's no wrong answer. If you were to tell me that the first one is your favorite, I wouldn't be angry, and if you told me the second one was your favorite, I wouldn't complain at all. But yeah, these are both extraordinary films. Like, they're entertaining, they're exciting, they're thrilling, they're depressing, they're unpredictable, they're high octane. There's so much going on in these movies. And these are also two great examples of how to utilize a 3-hour runtime beautifully. I mean, Godfather Part 2 is close to 3.5 hours. And, you know, that's essentially two movies in one, which is really, really great how they were able to pull it off. And yeah, I love these movies so much. I really do. I love these two movies. And I've talked to you about it before, David. I don't dislike The Godfather 3. I do owe it to myself to rewatch it. I haven't seen the new cut of it. I've only seen the original cut of Godfather 3. And I didn't hate it, but it's definitely it definitely pales in comparison to those first two. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very tough to be on the same level as those first two. But I bet you a lot of people weren't sure how The Godfather Part Two was going to be when that came out. I'm sure a lot of people were like, there's no way this is going to be on the same level as the first one. And I remember reading that it did well when it came out, but initially it wasn't as highly respected as it was now. Like, now everybody obviously loves it and everything, and rightfully so. But yeah, these are two extraordinary films. And I remember so well without, I mean, this movie's 50 years old. I remember so well the night that Succession ended. I remember you and I were texting each other, and you had said, this is literally The Godfather. I remember that so well. And that last shot of the entire series of Succession is pretty much akin to the final moments of The Godfather Part Two, which is really, really cool. I don't know if that's what they were going for. If it wasn't, I mean, they did a good job of making us think that they weren't going for that. But yeah, The Godfather and Godfather Part Two are my second favorite thing that Al Pacino's ever done. But like I said, it's definitely the best thing that he's ever done. But the only reason why it's not my favorite is because the number one pick for me is the one that has really stuck with me the most. Like, that to me is, like, when I think of Al Pacino, that's what I think of right away. So now transition to number one. Obviously, your number one is Jack and Jill. That's obviously your number one of all time. The Dunkachino, all copies, destroy them. No. So tell the listeners why The Godfather and Godfather 2 are your favorite thing that Al Pacino has done, but it's also your favorite movie ever. Am I right, or am I wrong?
Yeah, no, Godfather 2 is my favorite. Godfather 2 and Godfather 1 are my two favorite movies of all time. It's not like I think they've been my favorite movie of all time since I first saw them back when I was 13, 14 years old. I think it's fun. The comparison that I like to joke with, The Godfather Part Two is like the 23andMe of movies, because you're literally getting a whole family history in a 3.5 hour, because we start with Vito Andolini and work our way down to the end of Godfather Two, where, you know, the events happen with Fredo. I think Godfather Two at the time received a little bit more flack because it's a more challenging movie to take in. Narratively speaking, Godfather 1 is straightforward, point A, point B, point C. Godfather 2 just goes in completely different, like, directions that I don't even know maybe greenlit nowadays. It's just like a ballsy move by Coppola to do that. In terms of Pacino, I think this is the best performance of all time. I think he is so, so good in this movie. I always look at specific scenes as to, you know, we can speak in hyperbole as to why we think he's great, but I want to point to like a few little scenes that always stuck with me with Godfather 2. The first one that I don't see a lot of people talking about that I wish they did was when Fredo arrives in Cuba. And you as the audience know that Fredo is the quote unquote, you know, snitch into why the Corleone compound was shot up. But Michael doesn't. But Michael has a suspicion that it is Fredo. And in that that conversation where he makes Fredo take the money that he has no intention on giving Hyman Roth, and he brings it to Cuba, and they're sitting down having banana daiquiris or drinking, having banana daiquiris. And if you look at Michael's face, he is basically studying Fredo. He's studying his mannerisms. He's studying how he answers questions to see if he can get it out of him without basically Fredo admitting that he was the one that did what he did. I think that facially, his mannerisms, everything in that specific scene just captures what Michael Corleone is as a character, and how, you want to say manipulative, sure, but how intelligent he is in terms of how he knows how to play the game, how he knows how to play not just his family, but he knows how to play everyone in Cuba, Hyman Roth, everybody. He knows how to play everybody. And the second scene that I wanted to bring up was later on in the movie when shout out to Gordon Willis on this is the DP on this Godfather. The scene where he's standing over Fredo and he's like, you're nothing to me now, you're not a brother. And I think it's one of the best scenes for both of them, because Dale's like on another level in that scene,
Yeah.
which piggybacks off the scene where Mama Corleone dies and Fredo walks in and he's hugging him, and while he's hugging him, he's looking at Al Neri, and that face, he basically just gives the green light, like, I'm gonna kill my mother's son, I'm gonna kill my brother, and no words needed to be said. It's pretty perfect. And when we look at over the top Pacino, we can look at the scene with Kay in the hotel, which is probably the most powerful scene in the movie in terms of acting. Diane Keaton and Pacino are like cooking on like the gas is on fire, which how hot they are in that sequence where he's just like it was an abortion, Michael. I killed it because this must all end. And then Pacino's like, you won't take my, he hits her and he's like, you won't take my children. And he's like, you won't take my children. It's goosebumps every single time I watch it. Like I can go on and on and on about Godfather 2, so I won't like be too, I won't go too much longer on it, but I just think it's a perfect movie from top to bottom. It is my, we've been talking about the Oscars here and there throughout the podcast. It is the worst Oscar loss in history. Art Carney, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know what Pacino had to, I mean, we obviously know what he had to do to win the Oscar, but man, to sit there and say Art Carney and Harry and Tonto was better than Al Pacino in the Godfather Part Two, I don't even know what it, like what are Oscar voters thinking? Like, I don't even know.
Yeah.
And if you really want to look at it, if you want to say Nicholson in Chinatown, is it still like Pacino should have won? Yeah, but Nicholson in Chinatown is phenomenal. It's my favorite Nicholson performance. So like, great.
That's another major blind spot of mine. I still haven't seen that movie
Oh,
and I need
Chinatown's
to.
incredible.
Yeah, I need to watch that.
But I look back every time we look at every Oscar season, we look at the worst Oscar losses of all time, and that Pacino loss is always at the top. I also think
Yeah.
Godfather 2 should have been the first time that the it complete that supporting actor was completely from one movie. I think Godfather 2 should have. I think they got 4 out of 5, 3 out of 5 or 4 out of 5, but I think they got nearly the entire
Three. They
lineup.
got
It was
three.
3. Yeah, so they should have gotten the entire lineup there for supporting actors more. But yeah.
That would have been pretty cool. Yeah, I also just want to mention one last thing before we get to my number one. How fucking sick is it knowing that Francis Ford Coppola directed two Best Picture nominees that year? I mean, that is
Oh, the
really
conversation
sick.
is so good too. Conversation is great.
I just think that's so cool. It's such a rarity to see a director direct two Best Picture nominees in the same year. I think the last time that happened was with Soderbergh with Traffic and Aaron
Right.
Brockovich. I
Aaron
think that's the
Brockovich.
last time that happened, where he got two director nominations, which is a fucking rarity for that to even happen. The fact that he got two director nominations, it's like, well, he has a 40% chance of winning since there's two of him in this category. Yeah,
Can you imagine
yeah, the,
Oscar
every.
pundits nowadays? If oh, they're going to split the votes, and someone else is going to come up the middle and beat a Coppola for The Godfather, then I could imagine the conversations.
Yeah, I mean, like, no way, ain't no way. But yeah, great number one, great number one. And my number one was a film that I was kind of surprised was so low on your top five, but I'm glad it was even in your top five. And my favorite Al Pacino film of all time is Dog Day Afternoon. I just think that when I had watched this movie for the first time, I watched it during the height of COVID, finally. I watched it during lockdown. And after I got done watching it, I was like, how did I not watch this sooner? I just don't understand how I waited until 2020 to watch this movie for the first
Oh,
time.
wow. Wow.
I just think that everything that I love about Pacino is here in this movie. I'm also like, this is very important to address. I love films that are primarily set in one location. I'm a sucker for chamber pieces and everything. Obviously, it's not set entirely in this bank, but I really find myself so enamored by movies like this because there's a lot of claustrophobia sprinkled throughout these movies, and you never know where it's going to go. And Sidney Lumet, was really unlike any other filmmaker out there. Admittedly, he's a filmmaker whose entire filmography I haven't sat through, but I've seen a good amount to where I know exactly what he was going for. This is my favorite thing that I've seen from him, although 12 Angry Men is like right there. It's right behind this. That's another masterful film, another masterful film set in one location as well. But you brought up how the character of Sonny in this film, you would think that you would be so against him because, you know, he's robbing a bank and taking all these employees and customers hostage and everything. But you learn why he's doing what he's doing, and you could see the brokenness in him, which I really commend a lot. That's Sidney Lumet and Pacino. That's owe it to everybody. I think that everything here is really wonderful and remarkable. The Attica scene, one of the most iconic screams in cinema history. John Cazale deserves a massive shout out here. As great as Pacino is, and he is absolutely wonderful in this, the movie would not be what it is without Cazale by his side. He is absolutely unbelievable in this. He's so good in this, and the fact that he was taken from us way too early in his career and in his life is so devastating, because there was a great run with him. The fact that he was in 5 films over 7 years, 5 of which were nominated for Best Picture, and 3 of them being Best Picture winners in the two Godfathers, Conversation, Dog Day Afternoon, and The Deer Hunter. I mean, what a great run. Truly, what a fantastic run. And yeah, I remember watching this, not even knowing that it was loosely based on a real life story that happened in the early 70s, where someone tried to rob a bank in Brooklyn and everything. But just watching it unfold and not knowing the direction it was going to go, it all just came as a shock to me. Like, I had no idea the direction it was going to go. I had no idea who was going to make it out alive. I had no idea what was going to go down. And I found myself so riveted by this from start to finish. It flies by very quickly. It's very beautifully helmed. The writing, the directing, the acting, everything is fantastic. It won the Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay. Rightfully so. That was a very deserving win. In 2009, it was deemed culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant by the Library of Congress, as well as being preserved by the National Film Registry. This is my favorite thing that I've seen from Sidney Lumet, like I said. It's my favorite Al Pacino performance. I think he should have won an Oscar for this. I am not sure who took home the Best Actor prize that year.
Nicholson.
Damn it. That wasn't gonna happen. Yeah, you can't top that. I mean, that's like... you can't give it to anyone else but him. That's like, that's one of the greatest performances ever put to screen. I actually saw Cuckoo's Nest around the same time as this for the first time during the lockdown and everything. Those were two major blind spots, and I'm so glad that I got to see them back to back. Yeah, Dog Day Afternoon is absolutely exceptional. There's so much about it that can be said. I'm surprised that Chris Sarandon is a Oscar nominee, because I best know him as Jack Skeleton from Nightmare Before Christmas. I know he's also been in a few other horror films like Fright Night, and I know that he was also in The Princess Bride and Child's Play, but the fact that he's an Oscar nominee is really, really cool. I'm like, oh, Jack Skeleton is an Oscar nominee. Love that very much. Yeah, Dog Day Afternoon is my favorite thing that Al Pacino has been in. Like I said, I think The Godfather and The Godfather 2 are the best things that he's been a part of, but my personal favorite thing that he's ever been a part of is Dog Day Afternoon, which is funny. I've only seen this film twice. I just rewatched it a few days ago for this recording, and I mean, those last like 20 minutes really just like, well, they never left my brain, and I was not looking forward to getting back to that moment when I rewatched the movie, but it's just so incredible. And there's just a close-up on his face throughout the movie. Like, at one point in the movie, he's on the phone and just him hanging up the phone, and then him putting his hands through his hair and everything while there's sweat going down his face. One of my favorite shots, one of my favorite usages of a close-up in on screen ever. Yeah, this film really is fantastic. So it is my favorite thing. My favorite Al Pacino film of all time is Dog Day Afternoon.
great choice. I mean, you kind of painted a better picture as to why it's so good, better than I did. So, excellent choice.
Yeah, I mean, look, The Godfather 1 and 2, I mean, that's, like, again, I mean, there's no wrong answer. Someone would have put that as his favorite film. And it's so funny, like, I was also just looking at some cool facts for this. It's so funny that we brought up Hank Azaria a few minutes ago when we were talking about Heat. So when Hank Azaria actually auditioned for The Simpsons, he used an imitation of Sonny and ended up being the basis for the voice of Mo. Which is really so cool. Funny. Now that I'm thinking about it, it kind of does sound a little similar to Pacino a little bit. I could see some of the similarities in that voice compared to Pacino's voice here and everything. Yeah, I mean, God, the film is just so good. I love it so much. So now, before we get into talking about some honorable mentions, we're going to recap our list from 5 to 1. So, David, what is your list?
Yes, so at 5, it's Dog Day Afternoon. At 4, it's Scarface. At 3, The Irishman. 2, Heat. And then 1, Godfather 2 and 1.
And to recap my list, coming in number 5 is Insomnia. Number 4 is The Irishman. Number 3 is Heat. Number 2 is The Godfather 1 and 2. And number 1 is Dog Day Afternoon. So that is it with our list. So let's talk about some films that didn't make the cut. So what are some films that you want to give a shout out to that just missed out on being on your top 5 list?
Oh, great. Alrighty. So let me see. I had something set. Yeah, let's do this. So I want to give a shout out to Donnie Brasco. Didn't make my list, but wanted to give some love to the performance. They're very, the best way to put it, he played a loser really well. Because if you watch that movie, Lefty is basically, he's a loser within that organization, that family. He's never going to move push up, but he is loyal to a fault in that movie. I think Pacino is very good in that. Let's see. Want to give a shout out. I mentioned before, The Devil's Advocate. Movie may not be great, but Pacino is over the top. It's just hilarious. There is specific sequence where he's talking to Keanu Reeves, and he's talking about, even because he plays Satan in the movie. And then he's like, he talks about how God hates human, and he's like, I'm a fan of man! And he just hangs on the man. Also want to give a shout out to, not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination, but this is mid-2000s Pacino. I really like him in Two for the Money with Matthew McConaughey. That's a fun little sports movie. Ocean 13, want to give a shout out for him there. Scent of a Woman, listen, he won the Oscar for it, and I know a lot of people have feelings as to what, you know, he shouldn't have won over Denzel. Was it a career Oscar? Yeah, but I don't think he's bad in it at all. People remember the hoo-ha, but there's like a real vulnerability to that performance. And I think he's excellent in it. I don't think it's a bad one per se, the performance. Career, yes. I think he's actually really good in it. And then the last one I want to give a shout out, two more actually. Glengarry Glen Ross. I think he's pretty phenomenal as Ricky Roma. And a lot of makeup, but he's pretty awesome in Dick Tracy as Big Boy Caprice. So that, I could keep going, but those are some of the ones that I want to give some shout out to.
Yeah, so for me, in terms of honorable mentions, excluding the films that you brought up that didn't make my list, Serpico, I think, is very, very good. I think specifically for his performance. It was right after he did The Godfather, right before Godfather 2, and it was his first collaboration with Sidney Lumet, and it's really, really fantastic. Glengarry Glen Ross, I agree. That one I just rewatched as well, and that one he's so good in that, especially as Ricky Roma. I also like Scent of a Woman. I don't think that it's a bad movie. Yes, he shouldn't have won his first Oscar for it, but it's not a bad win by any means. It's just that in comparison to his other performances, it's definitely not the best. And I agree, like, everyone remembers the hoo-ha and everything, but there are plenty of funny moments throughout this performance, but there's also a lot of heartbreaking performances, like the scene in the hotel where he tries to kill himself, and then, you know, he's like, oh, you got this life. He's like, what life? I got no life! I'm in the dark!
Oh, I'm in the dark here! Also,
That's
the
so
scene,
good.
the Thanksgiving scene, also, that scene is
Oh,
heartbreaking too.
so good with Bradley Whitford. Oh, so good. So good. I just want to shout out one of the funniest moments in the movie was when Chris O'Donnell's character like wrote something on a piece of paper and then he just grabbed it and ate it. That was stupid. Was it? So good. There's like a whole compilation of like all of his lines in the movie on YouTube and it's so good. Uh-oh, we got a moron in here. I like it. And then that whole sequence at the end in the room and
Oh, the
everything, the
visible.
trial, what have you, so good. I'll take a flamethrower to this place. So it's so good. Al Pacino is just the king of yelling on screen. Donnie Brasco, I owe it to myself to shout that out because that's one of my dad's favorite films, and it is actually a really good film. I do like that movie a lot. Ocean's 13, I'm glad you shout that out. I like all those movies. So I'll definitely shout that out. Even though his role is small in this, I mean, I thought it was pretty fucking rad that the same year he made The Irishman and working with
Oh,
Scorsese
once
for the
before,
first time, he got to work with fucking Tarantino. Like
yeah, that's pretty
that
sick.
is so rad. That's so rad. And it was like a perfect role for him too. Like it was the perfect role for him. And just seeing him and Leo act in the scene together was so exciting for me. And then and I guess that's probably it in terms of honorable mentions. I haven't seen Dick Tracy, and I've always
It's
kind of
fun.
wanted to
It's a
watch that
fun
movie.
movie.
Yeah, I've always wanted to check that
Let
out.
me throw two more out. It wouldn't be me if I
Sure.
didn't really give love to Cruising. Cruising is, I can't believe that movie was made. Cruising is
That's
like,
another one that I need to see. That's another one that's high on my
it's
list.
a
William
wild
Friedkin.
movie. Yeah, it is wild. I can't believe that movie was made, but I actually really like Cruising. I think he's really good in The Godfather 3. I think he's very underrated. He's not as good as 1 and 2, but I think that movie just catches a bad rap for the Coppola of it all. It
Yeah.
would have been like on another level with Winona playing Mary Corleone as she was supposed to. We'll never find out. We'll never know. And then finally, his
Man.
first, not first movie, his first lead, because his first movie is Me, Natalie, but The Panic at Needle Park. He is phenomenal in The Panic at Needle Park. It kind of makes sense that Coppola probably saw this. He's like, you know what? I kind of want that Pacino guy. He is phenomenal in that movie. It's a hard watch. Kind of like a Requiem for a Dream kind of feel. It's very depressing, but it's very, very good.
Yeah, that one I also really want to check out. And you know what? Even though this film is so fucking bad, it is so bad. I'm sorry. I have a soft spot for his work in Jack and Jill. I know it's a really bad performance, but the fact that he actually decided to do a film like that and really commit to the bit, I kind of like the fact that he did that. And honestly, one of the funniest moments, and we talk about how it's kind of sickening how he only has one Oscar, the sequence where she accidentally breaks his Oscar, and she's like, oh, I'm sure you have others. And he's like, ah, oh, you would think that, but I don't, unfortunately. I kind of like how they played on to that. I thought that was really, really funny. But I just want to ask you briefly about that. How do you feel about his turn in that movie? Do you like that he commits to the bit that he's doing in that movie, or do you just straight up hate it?
I think he's hilarious, with the commitment, but I hate that movie. That movie's garbage.
It's really bad. It's really
But
bad.
like, if you look at like before we finish, like let me run through some of this stuff from like the 2000s, and you're gonna be like what happened? Like, so he directed a movie in 2000 called Chinese Coffee. That's okay. Then he does Simone, People I Know, The Recruit, Zhili, The Merchant of Venice, 88 Minutes, Righteous Kill, The Son of No One, Jack and Jill, Stand Up Guy, which is okay. Manglehorn, The Humbling, Danny Collins, Misconduct, Hangman, The Pirates of Somalia, and then Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and The Irishman. So Bobby does the same thing. Like, I think Bobby went into like a little rut, but like it was a rough patch for a bit for Al.
Yeah, and then he did House of Gucci, which to me was a bit of a step down.
I have fun with Gucci. I
I
have
mean,
too
it
much
was
fun.
fun. It was entertaining. It was
Him and Leto
entertaining.
are just
And then
hilarious together.
yeah, I mean, it's absurd. It's ridiculous.
It
It
is.
definitely embraces that. And then Al Pacino does have a few films coming out, and we'll talk about those very quickly. So First, he has a film coming out called Knox Goes Away, which is directed by Michael Keaton. It stars a really cool cast of Michael Keaton, Al Pacino, James Marsden, Marsha Gay Harden. So this actually premiered at TIFF last year, and I saw it. I went to the world premiere screen of it, and oh my God. I mean, you want to talk about a snoozer? Good God, this was so bad. This was so bad. This was the only movie during TIFF, and I'll say this, and this isn't necessarily the fault of the movie. It definitely is partially my fault because this was my fifth movie of the day at that point. I definitely dozed off a little bit during this movie, and it was a slog to get through, which is really disappointing. And I cannot even tell you how much of the movie Pacino was in, because I mean, it was 5 months ago when I saw the movie, but it was just that forgettable of a movie. But I mean, I guess it's cool that he got to work with Michael Keaton. I think that's kind of cool. And then he's going to be in a movie called Madi, which is directed by Johnny Depp. And then Al Pacino is in it as well. I don't know too much about this movie.
Same.
But you know what? I'm intrigued a little bit by it. And then a film called In the Hand of Dante, which stars Oscar Isaac, Jason Momoa, Gal Gadot, and Gerard Butler. Again, another film where there's not too much listed here. This actually just started filming very recently, right before the SAG strike ended. So this is probably still filming right now as we speak, but I mean, Oscar Isaac and Al Pacino, I mean, that's a pairing I have dreamt of for a long time. So I think it's cool that they're going to work together regardless if they're on screen together or not. I just think that's sick. But, Al Pacino doesn't have a lot more work, coming out, but I like that maybe he's, you know, starting to slow down and take his time with projects and everything and be a little more selective. But I do hope that we get at least one more film from him that's on the same level as The Irishman, where it's a reminder of how Pacino, even though he hasn't made a lot of hits in the last few years, it's a reminder that he is one of the greats of all time still to this day. So what are your final thoughts on Al Pacino?
Like, as at the start of the show, we talked about, like, I think he's my favorite of all time, my gateway. I think he's one of the most unique filmographies of all time. And I think someone that has able to take, we didn't talk about this a lot because we concentrated on his filmography, but I think he's someone that was able to take his talents to the small screen and do extremely well with it. And by that, I mean Angels in America. And I think his work on Angels in America is some of the best things he's ever done. And I think he's
to watch that before this, but I couldn't sit down to commit to 6 hours of watching that.
He's incredible. He's absolutely incredible. I think it shows the range that he was able to go to from big screen, small screen, the stage. He's able to do anything. And like you said, I think there's another Irishman in there left for him to do. And I hope we're able to see that before the end of his career.
Definitely. I've been a fan of Al Pacino for a long time, and I will always be a fan of him, even if his films in recent memory haven't been the best. Everybody has their duds. Not everyone has a perfect filmography, but I definitely feel that very soon we're going to get at least one more film that's on the same level as The Irishman for him. So, big fan of Al Pacino. I'm very glad we got to do this conversation. David, I just want to thank you for coming on to the podcast. It was great finally having you on the show and to talk to you about Al Pacino.
Thank you. Very happy to be here. And it was great to talk to Mr. Pacino.
Absolutely. And tell the listeners where they can find you online. Where could they find your work?
Yep. So, you can find my work at thecinematicreel.com. You can also follow me on Instagram, X, Twitter, at thecinematicreel. And you can also see my work on through my profile page on Rotten Tomatoes as well.
I will put links for all that in the description below. Go follow David. He's doing a lot of wonderful work out there. Really, truly wonderful work. Definitely give him a follow. And you guys can follow me on all social medias at Brian Stuffield. You guys can subscribe to the show on any podcast or platform. We have a Twitter and Instagram, so you guys can stay up to date with what's going on in Film Fragments. Let us know your favorite Al Pacino films. I'm very curious to hear everyone's list. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. Be on the lookout for more great episodes coming your way. And I will see you guys for the very next episode of Film Fragments. Take care, everybody.